ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, product owners all over this great big world, including the lone person listening in Lithuania. Welcome back to Deliver It. This is your Agile Product Owners Podcast. My name is Corey Bryan. This is episode number 110, and I am spending too much money. Too many things are breaking. Too many things need to be repaired. So all my money is going out, and it's a little bit frustrating. Speaking of which, there's a couple articles that I read. The first one I really liked was What Drives Rage Clicks? How Users Signal Struggle Frustration Online from Full Story. Now, this is a company that sells a product that tracks things, but I think it's an interesting metric to kind of think about is when people get frustrated, when they actually click and double click and triple click and don't stop clicking for 30 seconds and slam the screen and tap with their finger on the phone because they're frustrated. What does that frustration come from? What in your app, what in your product, what in their situation are they frustrated about? And how can you see where that occurs? How can you track where that occurs? What can you do about it? And it really does lead to some interesting insights and insights on your page, insights on the action they're trying to take, and what they're trying to do. They give a really good example in the article about things that are happening when people try to go to a sign-up page and that sign-up page gives a message that isn't clear and they keep clicking on the button and clicking on the button and clicking on the button, kind of like tapping an elevator button, waiting for it to get there faster. What do they do? Interesting concept to think of where are users frustrated and target that by saying how many times did somebody click more than 3 times in 5 seconds? That could be a rage click. You can see where these things occur at, right? Where's the dead time in your application? Where's their wait time? Where's there a misleading button or something that the user thinks they can do, something they can interact with, but they can't? And how does that manifest itself? Do they try to interact with it? Do they click around it? Do they get frustrated with it? Does the app crash when they do it too many times? Like I've seen a lot of products and apps and games and things do is when it gets stuck, it gets in a memory loop or it gets in some other type of situation where whatever condition has caused that, the user keeps trying something and it just blows up at some point and crashes the app. How many times has that happened to any of my products, any of my games or anything else that I've been doing? So rage clicks, some interesting metrics, something that I hadn't heard of as a unit before, but something I think that would be very beneficial to think about. And then another article from Anthony Martyr titled Why We Need to Rethink Product Management in an Agile Practice. A really good and balanced look, in my opinion, about what he sees as Agile and product working together. One of his interesting observations is a flip in that teams and engineers are starting to hate or complain about agility, and business people, business leaders, are actually interested, which, again, if you think about what it was for the longest time, it was engineers and teams trying to do agile and business saying, no, we can't do that. But now it's flipped, and why is that? He goes through, and I believe, is engineering and teams have seen so much bad agile that they don't want to do it anymore. And businesses are finally seeing the benefits from companies who have adopted and moved to that way of working, having success, and they want that success. They don't know how to do it, but they want that. So it's an interesting thing to think about. One of the problems that identifies, and it's I agree with, is product owners and product managers end up as order takers. They only focus on the mechanics of the role. I can't tell you how many product owners I see that are just backlog monkeys. And just shuffling stories and not thinking about bigger pictures or not thinking about customer impacts. They're just doing what they're told. And sometimes that's by design. Sometimes that's personality. None of it is good, in my opinion. And one of the main problems with that, and the reason I think he talks about product and Agile needing to rethink how they work together, is the teams need to be involved and the teams need to evolve with the product people. Again, one of the reasons I like Scrum so much is because it's all a team. The product, the developers, the product, the engineers, the Scrum Masters, you're all working together. You're all involved. You're all evolving the way that you work. So I think this is a really good view from Anthony about a bigger picture view and how it can work better together between traditional product managers and agile practices.
no doubt that this magnificent vessel will give excellent value for the dollars she'll be earning.
My returning guest today is somebody you've heard from twice this season. I don't know what else to say about him other than congratulate him on the fact that after 30 years, he's finally beaten Castlevania. Hello again, Todd Miller.
Hey, great to be back. You saw my tweet. I was really, really excited about that.
Were you playing on an emulator or what were you doing?
I was. So admittedly, I probably shouldn't talk about it, but I have an old PS Vita I put some ROMs on. And I was playing it. I had one of those wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning since we're dealing with this pandemic thing on a Saturday. And I beat the original NES Castlevania 1.
That's great. He's like, I finally understand enough. And there's enough cheat codes out there or walkthroughs to do it myself. Damn it.
It baffled me forever since I've been there a kid. But I did it.
There you go. Congratulations. The last episode that Todd was on, after the episode ended, we were kind of wrapping up and talking. And we got to talking about a topic idea that Todd, you were really interested in. And you actually put it in your Fixing Your Scrum book with Ryan, was this idea of product owners being lonely. And it was something that you were really excited about. It's something that I've experienced myself, and it's something that I think is a great topic for people because there's probably more than just us who have felt that feeling of loneliness as a product owner or who do feel alone as a product owner. And so today we're just going to explore some ideas, look at some learnings that we've both have, and look at some other information about the topic of loneliness.
So, I wrote a story in my book about a time that I experienced that. You know, being a product owner is difficult. And I've been a product owner in scaled environments before. And this one situation just always sticks out to me where I was in a very contentious meeting with stakeholders, yelling, disagreements, right? And it just wore me out and it set my day in the wrong direction. It was fairly early in the morning. And I remember walking out of that room just feeling utterly and entirely, I don't want to say abused, that's the wrong word, but it's exhausted already. And it's like 9:30 in the morning. You're exhausted at 9:30 in the morning because this isn't the first time it's happened. I'm sure everybody can relate to that. And I remember walking past the team area. There was 8 development teams sitting in there and then just people just were bugging me. And my reaction was really poor. And I'm not proud of it, right? Yeah. My reaction was poor because I was already worn out. It was 9:30 in the morning. And I remember making eye contact with this more junior developer. And he was kind of just like made him sit back in his seat. I remember actually sitting in the stairwell with my hands in my head, just being like, oh my gosh, like I don't know what's next, right? Like I can't catch a break today. And then I get an email invite in my calendar invite, in my inbox that the scrum masters want to speak with me. And the first thing that comes to my mind is, here we go. You know, let's just pile right on Todd today.
What else?
You know, I don't have anything. Yeah, just keep piling on. And they actually set up a meeting to just talk sports with me in the afternoon. They sensed that I was frustrated. They had seen a lot of the stuff that I had been through. We had had a very contentious sprint review or two, and where I kind of put the vest on to take any hit that they were trying to aim at the development team, which I thought was unfair.
Yeah,
and they just pulled me aside just to ask me if I was okay. And that situation just really stood out to me because I think that that day I remember just being like, I have nobody to relate to, nobody to talk to, nobody to bounce ideas off of. I feel alone.
The information you've got in the book, the little bit of the chapter of the product owner is the commander in chief. I really like the concept is that there's an immense amount of pressure, and there is. Stakeholders have high expectations. Some would say unrealistic expectations, but let's stay with high. The teams need clarity and support, and the customers are demanding. That's what leads to some of this behavior. When you see product owners, and this is not you, and I'm sure I've done this at some point in my life, in my product owner life too, where I've been that single authority or I've been the command and control type. I try not to be that. I want not to be that. And sometimes you get into that and that's a bad sign. And that's when you start behaving more like this and you isolate yourself more and more from everybody. You're isolated from the team. You're isolated from the stakeholders. You're isolated from your customers and you just go into, this is what I'm going to do and I'm not going to take any feedback on it. And that's a really bad mental state to be in. It's a really bad team state to be in, and it's a really bad product owner state to be in.
It is. And from a personal perspective, you just can't, you don't feel good. But you can't ever leave that state until you leave it, right? Like it's not like it goes away on the weekend, right? I'm sure you can probably relate to that. And so I wonder why, like, why do we get there? How do we get that to that point? And
I've been trying to think of when were the times that I experienced this feeling of, you know, I'm alone in this, or there's nobody that I can talk to about this thing. And, you know, there's a couple key instances of this. There was one time when I was working on a product and the budget was being threatened. And the budget was being threatened to remove the budget, and basically the product would go away at that point. And it was a great product. It's one of my favorite ones that I worked on. And the first time they came at me and said, well, if we can't get this, then the budget's going to go away. It scared me. And I didn't know who to tell. I didn't know who to, is that something you tell your team? I don't know. Right. I didn't.
Probably not.
I didn't. Yeah. I mean, maybe in an organization and maybe a team that's really transparent, really working together, you can figure those things out. I was inexperienced and I didn't. So I didn't tell them the first time. I didn't tell them the second time. I didn't tell them any of the times until the last time, which was number 7, when they finally did pull the budget. But that was after a year and a half of constantly threatening and me constantly saying, I don't know what to do with this information. I did eventually tell a coach, and I talked to my boss about it. You know, there was 100 other people on the team, even my product owners that I worked with. I didn't feel like I could tell them stuff like that because I didn't know, is that something you should tell? Is that something you shouldn't tell? You just don't know when some of these big what if scenarios come up, and I did feel immensely alone. It's like I shouldered all that on me, and I'm sure it reflected in what I was talking about and what I was saying to the team. And I've had, just like you had, I've had situations where stakeholders were yelling at me. Right. One instance of we were doing an A/B test, and it got to shouting matches several times during that. And that's ultimately why I left a position, is because I just got tired of being in those shouting matches, because I felt like I was the only one, you know, holding up the fort. And, you know, maybe that's me trying to color with rose-colored glasses, but I felt that way. I felt I was defending the team. I felt I was doing the right thing. And I was getting blasted for it. And that made me feel incredibly isolated.
Geez, every single scenario you just described, it like brings back feelings, because I had similar experience with everything. Yeah. And it's almost like the terrible feeling you have when you walk out and you feel like you were just a punching bag for stakeholders. Yeah. Wow. Meanwhile, I've also seen them get tired of me being the punching bag and then start doing things to development teams during sprint reviews or stuff like that. And then you have to feel like you have to step up again. And then you start questioning, am I going too far? Am I going to lose my job? Right. Yeah. Am I doing the right thing? And then the budgetary aspect too, it's like, is it, if I tell the teams, is it going to incite them to come up with a more innovative solution, or is it going to incite people to quit and be terrified about losing their job? And that's a lot of responsibility to hold, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And it really is down to that, you know, do you feel scared or stressed? We did an episode with Jeff Watts last year about feeling stress. This loneliness topic, though, is something that I think can lead to that stress, because if you feel like you're the only one doing something, fighting for something, or trying to get something done, then that does lead to stress. But dealing with that loneliness feeling is kind of what we wanted to explore a little bit. And looking at some of the other material, just psychology material and other things, and trying to pull out, you know, when have I felt this, you know, the different types or situations where you would feel lonely. If you're in a new job, if you're in a new team or in a new product area or something like that, and you don't know it, you can feel incredibly alone. When it comes to that, you know, who do I talk to? I don't know who to go to. Am I comfortable going to this? If not, then I'm going to sit here and wallow in my thoughts.
Yeah, a new situation. What's interesting to that is I've become to trust Scrum so much when you're using it, and you're in that, like, a new situation is always call for building trust as quickly as you possibly can. You know, I was just having this conversation this morning that what's the best way to do that? Deliver.
Yeah.
Right. And that's it's an interesting thing because everything we do is all hypothetical as product owners until it's out there.
Yeah, until it's live and somebody goes, oh, I like that or I don't like that. You don't know.
Yeah.
Really don't.
I think there's probably some sanity in that. There's probably some sanity in getting away from loneliness through validating what your hypothesis have been,
mm-hmm.
right? What your guesses have been, because you can go crazy trying to figure out every dependency, trying to figure out the order the product backlog should be in, what the most valuable thing to do is listening to everybody. But sometimes it's just, you got to try it and get it out there.
Yeah. Another type that I thought was pretty interesting is the I'm different scenario. And product owners, you know, there are only three roles in Scrum. And product owner is one of them. Scrum masters, usually you have a collaboration of Scrum masters, but product owners, I rarely see product owners share as much as I do Scrum masters or team members. So that can definitely feel like, you know, my role or my position is different than the others. So I'm going to feel isolated or alone because of that.
Yeah. You know what that made me think of? It made me think of, is you see Scrum master communities of practice.
Yeah.
How often have you seen a product owner community?
Very rarely. Very rarely.
I wonder if we should change that. I wonder if we should start thinking that way, even if there's three of us.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the reasons I do the show is because I figured, I want to talk about this. And sometimes I can't stop talking about this. But B, you know, there's people who are isolated in different parts of the world. And I hear from them, you know, I hear from people in random countries all over the world that, you know, they are the only product owner and they don't have any other experience. And this is the way that they can learn and connect and feel connected. And that's a big motivator for me for doing this. But I don't think that product owners should view themselves as different from a group of Scrum Masters or a group of team members or something like that. I think there should be more communities of practice for stuff like that.
I also think that Scrum Masters should be educating themselves so that they can help serve the product owner a tad better or be allowed to do that because sometimes they're not.
Yeah.
They should be a really good partner with you.
Yeah.
They should be helping you to figure out some of the things that might be areas that you're not strong in. And it's just a shame that we have to talk about that because Scrum Masters and organizations should be recognizing this.
Yes.
So I think that's a call out if Scrum Masters are listening to this. This is an issue that ultimately you need to help.
Yes.
If part of your responsibility is in Scrum is upholding the Scrum framework, then part of that is enabling and helping the product owner and serving the product owner well.
Another type is the no time for me. I run into this all the time when I see people that just their calendar is from 7 to 6 with meetings. And it's like, when do you actually work? When do you actually have time to think? When do you actually do the job? When you're not just running from meeting to meeting, passing off request from request, when do you actually stop? And the answer very often is I don't. I do this on the weekend or I do it when I go home. God, that's horrible. That's horrible. There is no time to, I guess when that does stop, then you are isolated. Now what do I do? Now what do I do?
Yeah. Oh, I could tangent on the meeting topic all day, every day.
Yeah, especially now.
Right. Because, yeah, how many of those, and so this is an interesting thought. How many of those could potentially be, in thinking of my time as product owner, how many of those are we in just so that we feel like we have the information that we need when the reality of it is, we probably don't mean to be in 50% of them.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, maybe it's worth questioning and I mean, we'll probably get to this because I think that you had mentioned this and it sparked a lot of interest in me is figuring out delegation, right?
Yeah.
Figuring out delegation and trusting other people around you, development team members, Scrum Masters, partners, yeah. Right. Shouldn't we just question all the meetings that we're in anymore?
I think we really should, especially the ones that are over 25 minutes. I use that number very specifically. But I think if you start to question those meetings or question your role in those meetings, the majority of meetings that I'm in for the last 10 years or so have been some type of status. It's been some type of, how are we doing with this? Where are we at with this? What's coming up with this? It's not been about what we've done or how the real problems that we're solving. It's been about status. Part of that's because I've worked in organizations that, you know, were not agile like I would like them to be. And because that was just the reality. And that sucked. But that was real.
Very little action taking.
Yeah.
I've kind of been in a little bit of a tirade about meetings recently, just because you're right. I'd say probably 80% are status. There's no decision making being made. Yeah. There's really no collaboration. It's the round robin or the brainstorm. That's the worst when you get invited to one of those. Let's brainstorm with 40 people. Yeah. Meaning two people are going to brainstorm, or the other 38 people
check their emails. Yep. Another one down there, the feeling of loneliness is the untrustworthy coworkers. Trust is a big issue in Scrum, big issue in Agile. We talk about trust all the time. And I would like to extend trust. I've been better at that, extending trust and not having people earn it. But when you extend, and when you extend trust and they violate that trust, then what do you do? That's something that I don't hear a lot of talk about is, and yes, you would hope, and I've seen people grow when I extend that trust. But sometimes I've also seen people that are just, you know, they're bad coworkers. They're underhanded or they're political or they're up for something and they will use you or your team or your product or anything to get what they want. And you just can't trust those people. You can't talk to them. You can't invite them in, I don't think.
Yeah. It's a two types that I can think of is the idea stealers. Mm. You've been around those before, or the throw under the busers.
Those are the worst.
Yeah. And I think the throw under the busers is probably fairly prevalent in the product owner community, right? Because, I told you that. I told you I didn't think that that was that valuable, right? And that can come from a multitude of directions because of how many people that you need to interface with and the different types of people, from customers to stakeholders to development team members, accounting to marketing to sales, the people that you may be interfacing with. And I think it's easy to flip that. I told you so. Or worse yet, when you hear it through an ancillary channel that someone threw you under the bus. I call me simple, but I just believe in karma with that, you know. And sometimes I've confronted it, and sometimes I've thought to myself, it's just a waste of my time to approach this person. And I'm going to take the high road. And if they want to continue to do that, I'm doing the best I can here, right? So I'm gonna let it settle at that. That's a hard thing. That's a hard thing to make a decision on.
It is.
Because it can turn on you fairly quickly too, right?
You know, in the last couple of years, I've really come to grips with, again, the notion that the only person I can control is me. The only action, thoughts, and feelings I can control are mine. And if somebody else has something else, that's fine. I may choose not to associate with them or may choose not to, you know, deal with them in a, you know, deal with them as much as I need to and talk to them as much as I need to. But share the information, do what I need to do, and then go on about the day and do things that are really interesting.
Yeah, I think you're right, though, that untrustworthy co-working thing could really lead you to sitting with your hands down in a hallway, just trying to take a break, right? Because it can start to feel like the cards are stacked against you a bit, too.
I mean, how many times have we, as product owners, when we go to the team and say, hey, team, here's this cool epic that would net us $1 million this quarter, what do we think about it? And we look at it and go, okay, well, we can do this by this quarter. And then we come back to the stakeholders or we come back to the customers and say, okay, here's what it looks like. It looks like we'll be able to do this. And then that becomes a deadline and that becomes a requirement. And that becomes a commitment. And then we don't hit that. And then that untrustworthy person has taken that commitment and use it against us, or taking that thing that we said that we would work on and say, well, you didn't have it done, so we can't trust you anymore.
Yeah, and that's an interesting way to potentially, there's a lot of interesting stuff that you said in there, and there's a lot of things that I believe we can do to create transparency. It's really important for us as product owners to create transparency, right? It's not just, we're not excluded from that. It's a whole Scrum team thing. So I think I probably overprotect myself in that regard when it comes to this kind of situation, either as a Scrum Master serving a product owner, or as a product owner. And I should say that having been a product owner before has made me exponentially better Scrum Master.
Yeah.
Right. Because then you come into the sprint review and you say, you know what, this is not just a demo. Product owner, you need to start showing forecasts. You need to start showing where we were wrong, where we were right, what's happening in production with the validations that you're trying to make. Like, this is a big time collaborative session. Mm-hmm. We need to leverage this just as much for a product owner as we do for the rest of the Scrum team, right? It's really important. And so, but you can always have that person that comes 6 sprint reviews later and says, this isn't what you said you were going to do. Yeah. Right.
That's always going to happen. There was a really cool article by the Harvard Business Review, and I went through and looked at that, and they were talking about senior leaders or CEOs or other people who are very, who do feel isolated. We've also heard that CEOs and senior leaders can feel isolated because they don't have peers. And really what they kind of boiled that down to is the power increases loneliness when it involves sole responsibility for exceedingly tough decisions that nobody wants to make. That's really stressful. And it can lead to, again, what we're talking about is loneliness is I'm the only one who can make this. How do I make this decision? Do I make it by myself? Do I have responsibility for this? We talk about accountability. If you're a senior leader in an organization, you make a decision, you're accountable for that decision, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know what it reminds me of the phrase of, it's lonely at the top.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And I'm not saying product ownership, you're at the top. I mean, I think it's an awesome role to play. But I mean, I remember when I, for a particular team that I played for in sports, and I was voted to be a team captain, and I had someone come up to me and be like, this, you're going to have a different view of everything now because it's lonely at the top. Mm-hmm. And I think some of that was true there. I don't know why I'm correlating it to that, probably because it was the game of rugby. But, I think that's really true. And, you know, it makes me also think of how oftentimes I've met product owners who are treated as if they have sole responsibility, but they actually don't. They don't have, it's like you are solely responsible for the outcome of this product development effort, but we are not going to tell you what the budget is.
Yeah. We're not empowering you to do the role, but we expect you to do everything. those are fun situations.
Yeah, but if it goes wrong, you're in trouble.
Yeah, you're in trouble. But you hadn't, you know, you couldn't change the epics we were working on. You couldn't change the budget. You couldn't, you know, you had no responsibility to do it, but you had all the accountability.
And I think, you know, and thinking of it and kind of going back to the original thing that you say, power increases loneliness because of sole responsibility. I think maybe right there is that's something that we need to explore when you're in a product owner role. Like, how do you avoid that trap? Because what we really talked about early on in here is all the things that can go terribly wrong if you allow this to get to you, right? You stop talking to stakeholders. You start ignoring customers. You start to say, well, I'm just going to make the decision. You're frustrated. You're probably burnt out. So I think that's why, you know, before we started today, it's just like this topic is actually really important. Because I've run into so many product owners that suffer from
this. The other thing that's in the HB article that I really liked was it talks about objective and subjective isolation, and that the number of connections that you have, so the number of coaches, scrum masters, other people that you talk to is not necessarily corresponded to how connected you feel, which that feeling of isolation, that feeling of connectedness, I think is really important. It says you can have a very few trusted advisors and feel socially connected, or you can have hundreds and feel totally alone. The best thing I can do is relate it to social media and how some people have thousands of followers, but they still feel alone. And somebody who has like my Facebook, I only have like family on there. So I have like a dozen people on there, but I feel more connected to them because I'm closer to them. So, you know, I've had a couple of coaches and scrum masters and other people that I stay in touch with, and I feel completely connected, even though that number is less than 5. Where somebody might have, you know, go to all the meetups and all the local events and everything else, but still feel like they're not making connections with people.
Yeah, I wonder if that's, so I think really kind of reading between the lines there, it's to say, find the right kind of help. It's out there somewhere, right? And sometimes it could just be self-help, like listening to this podcast it's been excellent to see a lot more books have emerged over product ownership recently.
Yes.
You know, I mean, if you remember for years, it was just like what I felt like the only book that you could read on product ownership is that Roman Pickler's old book, Agile Product Management with Scrum. Mm,
yeah.
That was the first product ownership book. I mean, I try to understand product management in general, but I mean, I'm a development background, right? So yeah, that's interesting because you could overwhelm yourself with help.
And I think that's the, you know, we talked about feelings of isolation, and I'm sure product owners, you know, you've gone through those feelings of isolation, even if it's for a day. It may be, you know, hopefully it's not for longer than a sprint or something like that. But there have been times where I felt completely alone or completely isolated, even though I was talking to people, I was attending, you know, stand-ups, I was talking to developers, I was talking to stakeholders. You know, for months, I would feel like it was all on me, like it was just me, and how do I deal with this? And I'm the only one who can deal with this. So those feelings, they don't last. I mean, they come and they go, hopefully.
Yeah.
Hopefully they don't sit on you and really crush you for too long, but they can. And I think it's important to acknowledge the feeling that I feel alone in some cases, right?
Yeah. And if you think about, I mean, if you're in a situation and it feels like it's prolonged, it's always my advice to say that you should analyze your position and see if it's time to make a change. Because if this, so I think what we're talking about here is just the stress of the responsibility that you have as a product owner that can weigh on you. You're going to make wrong decisions.
Oh, absolutely.
In every profession.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. And I think that's where oftentimes I felt alone, or you're going to be in really, I think as a product owner, you tend to engage in more the higher level executives have really earned their way to be there, and it could be contentious. So I think you might experience that aspect of it a bit more too. But we have to remember though that like we're part of a team, Scrum team.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the ways that we can start to feel less alone. And some of the things that we've, you know, some ideas, some tips, some suggestions for the product owners who do feel alone, and even us when we feel alone, is the need to be more collaborative, the need to be more open, the need to be more transparent about as much things as we can. There may still be the one or two things we have to hold back, or still one or two things that we have to think more about. But on the whole, I think being more collaborative, open, and transparent, you know, embodify those Scrum values, embodify those Agile principles and values, that will really help us feel less alone because we are part of the team.
Yeah. And there's a whole bunch of different ways that you can go about doing that. And maybe it's as simple as, is the goal of where we're going in the next 6 months very clear? And do we have something to measure it?
Yeah.
Right. And is everybody behind it? Does everybody from stakeholders to customers to development team members understand that? Maybe it's the goal of the product, right? Maybe it's the overarching goal of the product. But I think that's really true. We can't fall into that trap where holding on to information becomes something that feels safer because of, you know, we were talking about untrusting colleagues and stuff like that. I would rather just be an open book about everything. And it just feels better that way. And oftentimes the situation will dictate how you can do that and what you can use to do that. But I mean, we've got this awesome thing called the product backlog where there's a ton of information stored.
Yep.
Right.
One of the other things that I've been working on myself, and I try to help other people do, is when it comes to sharing things, be uncomfortable or be comfortable with uncomfortableness. We talked about it a couple of times. You may not know everything that's going to happen. Say that. You may not have 100% or even 80% knowledge about something. Say that. Something I'm reading right now is talking probabilities, talking, you know, not absolutes. You know, we think this is what we're doing. We don't know. Be comfortable with saying, I don't know. It's very hard for some people, especially for product owners sometimes, to say, I don't know, and let's find out. But come to the team with a suggestion or a question and let them help you. Let them, again, that's being more collaborative. It's, here's the thing I'm struggling with, team. What do you think about this?
Yeah, and remember that we're trying to leverage Scrum to our competitive advantage, right? In 4 weeks or less, you should have a potentially shippable product increment. And how that can be advantageous for you is that you, as we mentioned before, have developed a lot of hypotheses about what's valuable and what's not. And it's just a hypothesis,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so leverage Scrum to ship early and often and validate those assumptions. Some of them are not going to be right. That's totally fine.
It's probably best to think that 70% of them aren't going to be right.
Yeah.
70% aren't, 30% will, but get that in your head as, you know, it's not 100%, it's not even 80%, it's 30%. Let's talk batting averages here, right? 300 as a batting average is a pretty damn good batting average.
So, and, you know, this reminds me too of the book Thinking in Bets, Annie Duke.
Oh, yes, yes, right? Yes, yes.
So, and there's actually a really interesting article I read too that kind of painted the picture of that when it comes to the NFL draft. Have you read that article? Mm-hmm. I can't remember what it's called. So it talks about these teams that want to trade up to get a higher draft pick. And it shows like the laws of probability. And it's like, that is absolutely the worst thing you can do. Rather than have four picks, you're better off having 10.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You're better off making 10 bets because it's a higher probability that one of those bets is going to come in.
That if you've never seen Moneyball or read Moneyball, that's one of my favorite books and movies because it gets into those. All they want to do is get people on base and move them around.
Yeah. And so if you think as it correlates to this loneliness topic we're talking about, if you think about that, if you're trying to, making a bet is shipping into production and validating your hypothesis, mm-hmm. validating it or invalidating it, right? You need to get it to production. So I think that leads into a whole other conversation about how we need to afford the time for the teams to not put pressure on the teams to cut quality. Yeah. How, you know, I say when I'm a product owner, I start with saying, I want a button on my desk that says ship it to production. That's why I want you to code.
Nice.
Right. Yeah. And they take that seriously. The development teams love that. Right. Yeah. Like I think that might help curtail it a little bit when you're actually validating things. Yeah. You understand the consequences of your decision making a little bit more.
One other thing that can help is identify and know who your peers are, both in work and out of work. Who are, you know, we talked about product owner meetups or product owner community practice, either in your company, on your team, or in your area. Who are the people you can talk to? I mean, one of the things that I've noticed that's really good about the current situation is there's a lot more openings for meetups that are not specific to, you know, some town in England anymore or some place in North Carolina. It's open to anybody. Anybody can join these things. And that really does lend itself to more groups that you can participate in, more groups that you can find, and find your peers, find people that you can talk to about the same problems that you probably share. And that will lead you feeling less alone.
So I hope that world continues, though, that we're able to have as much accessibility as we have right now. I really think that it's changed. That's a positive maybe coming out of this, right?
Absolutely.
I was just on in a user group talk this morning in the Netherlands.
There you go.
Wouldn't have been able to do that a year ago, I don't think.
Nope.
But, you know, it's interesting, too, because when you say peers, it may not just be the title product owner that you're after.
Yeah, I've considered some of my dev managers, my peers, or some of my design people peers, or some coaches peers. It's who can you talk to about the situation? Who can give you advice, or who can listen to that? I have a few confidants too. I have a few people that I rely on for any kind of big decisions or anything that I'm kind of questioning about. I'll run it by them and see. They may give me perspective that I don't have. They may give me new information. So where does that new information, where does the outside information come from? Not only outside your current team and outside your current company, but where do you get information all over the place from?
Yeah, and sometimes it's good to talk to one of those confidants, because sometimes, do you ever spin?
Oh, absolutely.
My confidants will be like, Todd, you're doing a Todd. You're spinning. Right? You're spinning. Just hit the go button. Beat Castlevania again. Yeah. Right? I feel like you need to really develop those relationships that can recognize. I mean, we all have our own personality quirks, right?
Yeah.
And so I tend to like, I will analyze angles to death, right? I will just keep looking at everything. And sometimes I just need someone to like hit my stop button.
Yeah. And I often do. One of my character traits is I like to do a lot of research. I like to go look at options. I like to look at, pros and cons. I like to weigh things. And then, sometimes it's really clear which option I should go with or which option I want to go with. And then sometimes it's not. And when it's not, it's awful helpful to talk out those things with somebody and go, okay, here's what I'm thinking. Here's what I like. Here's what I don't like. And then they can ask the key question. And it's usually one question after about seven that hits me and go, oh, I know what I want to do now. Like, great. That's what I needed that for.
Do you think when we had this conversation that I'm going to bring it back to our Scrum Masters feeling like our peers a bit more?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's something that we can we can rely on them to help us. And we can ask them about a lot of things. I don't know if they have the same perspective as product owners, though. And that's where it comes into who can you talk to that understands what the questions that you're asking or what the issue that you see is. Because they may be looking at, you know, team and interaction, but you're really talking about market and workflow type stuff. So maybe there's a disconnect there, but you can definitely start with them and see what they may know somebody else to talk to, because they may know another product owner or something that you can connect with.
Yeah, I'll probably reiterate, because I feel like we've squashed the Scrum Master role down into being a team manager. That's how it's viewed everywhere, development team manager. If I'm, you know, ever blessed with a situation where I get to be a product owner of something again, I really want someone there that when I'm spiraling like that can sit me, ask me those like 9 whys,
yeah,
to stop me from spiraling and to lend that help. I do want them to feel like a confidant. They may not have all the information, but I probably don't either. So I think that this is just my, I just like to keep reiterating that Scrum Masters need to have some idea of what we do. And they need to also bring some practices to us that might help in the context of a situation where we need to make the product backlog more transparent. Yep. Or our goal isn't clear enough. They need to maybe call us on that.
Absolutely.
So let's, maybe if for anybody in the org that's sitting in an organization that feels like they're a Scrum Master that just manages burn up charts or a burn down chart, right? Let's get over that. It's not what it was meant to be. We need to move past that. You're more than that. So I have to always get that.
No, that's fine. That's perfectly fine. So I think that's the big takeaway for me is if you feel isolated, work on making connections, work on being collaborative, open, and transparent. But that comes from connecting with people, with individuals, individuals on your team, individuals in your company, individuals around, you know, find a peer group with similar circumstances. There's all kinds of meetups and everything going on right now. Hopefully this show is definitely one of the ways you can do it. There's a ton of shows out there that you can connect with and understand. And find those 4 or 5 people, I think, that either can coach you or know you really well. And you can use as those advisories to talk about your fears, to talk about your perspective, to talk about the challenges that you're facing, and ask for help or ask just to listen. I've paid people to listen as therapists or coaches and just got things off my chest. And again, it's worth it, because once you explain things and put your information out in the world to somebody else, they can see the same things you see, and they will see something a little bit different than you. They can ask that key question. And then I think that changes. Those have been the biggest epiphanies for me, is when I've had those types of conversations.
Yeah. And just one that I'll add in there is that take sanity in the fact that you are leveraging empiricism, inspection, adaptation, and transparency to validate. Really rely on that, because to me, you can easily build trust when you're incrementally delivering and you're validating your assumptions, and it lends itself to easier decision-making and better conversations. So take sanity in the fact that you're leveraging Scrum and empiricism to validate assumptions. And if that always feels really good for me.
There was a quote that I had read in my research, which I really liked, which is, "One person's isolation becomes a larger problem when it leads to poor decision-making, negativity, fatigue, and frustration. And who wants to work with an unhappy person?" Probably nobody.
That's a really good point. That's a really good point.
Probably nobody.
And who wants to be an unhappy person?
Those things I've felt, and those things I don't want to feel, right? If I feel those for too long, then yeah, I get to the point where I don't want to be around me.
Yeah. I think that's why we were talking after your last show about this topic, and we both just like struck a chord, and it was like, we both felt the exact same way as a product owner before. So I'm hoping that just by us having this conversation and people listening to it, that maybe we'll get them out of it a little bit, or give them an idea that will help them get them out of it.
Yep.
You know, kind of push them in some kind of direction not to feel that way, because it stinks.
It really does. It really does.
Yeah.
Very good. And you're on Twitter at Todd_Miller11. You and Ryan have transitioned into doing Craft Brew Agile 2, which is an interesting podcast/videocast series that you guys are doing. And I really enjoyed watching your lessons learned from implementing evidence-based management. I've talked about EBM on the show before, but seeing you and Patricia go through those were really good sessions. So,
oh yeah, check that out, product owners. If you're stuck in a metric conundrum right now, check out evidence-based
those
management.
Those are the metrics to use, definitely.
Yeah, works so great.
Very cool.
Works so great. We're still, you know, trying to sell our book, Fixing Your Scrum, Common Solutions to Common Scrum Problems. Ryan and I have also transformed everything into live virtual training. So anybody who's maybe interested in any of that, that'd be awesome. You can come check us out.
All right. Well, thank you, Todd, very much. And we will talk to you later.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on again.
If you have any feedback or questions about product ownership, you can contact the show on Twitter at DeliberateCast or email us at DeliberateCast@gmail.com. Please share the show around with friends and coworkers. Subscribe and help us reach more lonely folks. A couple questions that I saw this week. One was from Arana, who asks, as a product owner, what makes you feel like you're always busy and overwhelmed? Really good question. What makes you feel like you're always busy and overwhelmed as a product owner? I think that think time thing that I've come back to time and time again is, do you have think time or not? Do you have time to take for yourself? Do you have time to study or read an article or watch a video or something like that to learn something? If you have time to learn, then that's great. If you have zero time to learn and you're just chugging through emails and lists and backlogs and other things, then I feel like I would be pretty overwhelmed and pretty busy. So that's kind of a key for me is, am I doing some of the things myself or am I always doing something that somebody else is asked to do? And a question from Amy, who has a question about user stories. What is the best practice for doing needed research on any upcoming change? I would like to have a research user story with points and a deliverable to the team, which would be a document to be described what was learned and the next steps. Currently, there is lots of pushback on this in my organization as this work is not going into production. I'm being instructed to do the work under backlog refinement tasks. Okay. A couple of things there. Best practice. Don't like that phrase. It may be a practice that's useful in your condition, but it's usually not best practice. User research stories. It's a story that you need to do for research. It might be a spike. It might be something that you're trying to learn. To me, that's the key is what does the team need to learn? And if the team needs to learn something to be able to implement something, whether that's a spike or you want to do a first version of that, then yes, I would involve the team. Yes, I would plan for that work, which means talk about it in the sprint planning, talk about it as far as estimation goes. How much time are we going to reserve for this? How complex is this? Who's going to be involved in this? And you should have an output, and that output should be either a prototype or a document or something that you can share the learnings on. Absolutely, that's great. Currently, the idea about their people pushing back because it's not going into production, not everything will. Again, it's what are you delivering at the end of the sprint, at the end of the iteration? If what you're delivering at the end of the iteration for this story is new research or new learnings that will help you in the next sprint, then that's great. I think that's perfectly valid. I think that's something that you should be doing a lot of. Again, you talk about the discovery and delivery. You have to discover what to deliver. You can't just focus on delivering. There's a great image I saw today from Melissa Perry, I think, who tweeted it out, somebody who did one of her talks that firing 50 arrows gets you a 50-arrow quotient, but hitting the bullseye with one arrow feels a lot better. So which one are you going after there? So I would definitely take the time to learn, definitely give the team time to learn and figure out what they want to do next to solve that important customer problem. And that'll do it for this episode. Thanks again to Todd. Go check out the book. Go check out all the things that Todd does. We'll have a link to them in the show notes. Also, don't forget that if you would like any one-to-one coaching, product consulting, or organizational agility help, I do offer that over at seektaiju.com. All opinions expressed here are mine. Find more of them at Is Corey Bryant on Twitter. That is episode 110 delivered. Go out and own the outcome. We'll be right back.
Podcast Network. For more shows and information, visit agilepodcastnetwork.com.